From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of March, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll check in on the agricultural cash grain markets with the folks at the Andersons. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, we'll preview the end of the month grain stocks report with University of Illinois agricultural economist Todd Hubbs, and it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this 12th day of March. We're now joined by Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, as Kurt is out for the day. Hey, thanks, Pete, for picking up the shift this afternoon.
I'm happy to do it.
And on Friday, we had a 24-cent drop in the soybean market. I thought maybe many people were thinking this would be the beginning of the end, potentially, and that there would be some follow-through on Monday. That did not happen, though the overnight trade did trade a bit lower at some point. I don't think too much. Why did we not see follow-through, in your opinion?
Well, the weather forecasts for Argentina continue to be drier, and they didn't get as much rain with as much coverage as expected over the weekend, and the amounts coming are only in parts and not very big amounts. So Argentina, again, drier forecasts and not as much as expected over the weekend. That helped push the beans up, and corn, not as much rain as expected in as was forecast in our wheat country out west, and that helped our wheat be higher, and that helped hold corn higher.
And of course, the other big issue that's been haunting the soybean market but doesn't seem to have had much of an impact yet is the potential, and we heard about this or will shortly from the American Soybean Association, for China to retaliate against any tariffs that might be imposed on aluminum and steel that would be coming from that country by the Trump administration. That one, is the trade simply ignoring it and waiting to see how the trade kerfuffle pans out in Washington, D.C.?
I think it depends on who you talk to in the trade. Some are very worried about it. Some aren't worried at all, thinking that they've got to have beans and they can't get all they need from South America. So they might, you know, have a little bit of it. But, you know, if they do have a tariff on our beans, that could hurt us tremendously. I think industry in general is thinking, well, they can't have that much of a tariff or of a problem with this because they have to buy some beans from us to fulfill their needs.
What'd you make of the corn market for the day?
Corn market hung in there really well. I mean, we hung around unchanged for a long time, but then closed a hair higher. We're still above four in that December. We hit 408 for a high. We did not stay below it. We did go to 99 in the September. I think December held at 403.5 for a low. And I think that's pretty impressive, staying above the $4 level. Usage is good, but we have an awful lot of old crop corn lying around. We're still worried about corn acres later in the month.
No, I was thinking about that at the end of the month. In fact, USDA will release two reports. The grain stocks figures are due out, as well as the prospective planting numbers. That on Thursday, the 29th, USDA in its Ag Forum said 90 million acres of each. That after November, projecting maybe 91. So there was a bit of a drop from November to their February numbers. This time around, though, it is a survey of farmers. Are you getting a rough estimate of whether you think those numbers for corn and soybean acres will change very much from that 90 and 90 that USDA currently is using?
I think corn will go down a little, but I just don't know how much, and beans up a little. A lot of farmers are not going to change anything. But if you go to fringe areas, I think there's going to be more beans and less corn. Here right through the central heart of the Corn Belt, there will be some more beans. But, you know, corn's back over $4. On the board, they're looking at maybe a little higher down the road, so I don't know if there's going to be as much through this central area of less corn, more beans as there is on the fringe areas.
Over the last month or month and a half, farmers have felt better about the price of corn, actually the prospects for corn, I suppose, as opposed to the price of corn currently. Part of that was due to the dry weather conditions in the United States that existed until we had those big rains. Those have since dissipated, of course, meaning the dry conditions have gone away in a large part of the Midwest. And then they began to feel as if consumption was a much bigger part of the picture. Are they still, after last week, feeling a little more friendly to that marketplace?
I think they really are. Corn above four, staying above four is helping. And then beans, cash beans above 10, we dropped back below that Friday. But here again today, cash beans in a lot of places over 10 for fall. I think that will encourage the beans. The corn going over four and staying, 405, 408, I think that's helping the corn people. So it's a battle still, but I think we'll still see a little bit more bean acreage just because of the cash over $10.
About the 24-cent drop that happened in the soybean market on Friday, is it possible that that is just a correction in the marketplace, in your opinion?
It possibly is. There was a lot of worries about how much moisture are we going to get over the weekend, and we didn't get that much in Argentina, and so it's back to the dry there. After going up over a dollar and a quarter, you normally have some, reassessment of things, and that might be kind of what it was.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it, and glad you were able to fill in this afternoon.
Have a great one.
You too. That, of course, Pete Manhart. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Hey, on Wednesday evening of this week, I hope you can join us as well. We'll be in Clinton with another one of our ag panels. Todd Hubbs will be there from the University of Illinois. He's an agricultural economist. You'll hear him coming up not so long from now here on the radio station. And Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, should join us. That's at the Richland Community College. Thanks to our sponsor, WHOW Radio. That's the big AM 1520 out of Clinton, Illinois. That's Wednesday evening. You can join us. This is open and free to everybody. You're going to head to the Richland Community College building in Clinton. So if you're used to hearing about that being in Decatur near the Farm Progress Show site, that's not where we'll be. We'll actually be in Clinton. It's really simple and easy to find. Look for 140 Sunset Court. That's out on the west side of town. So you'll find us there in Clinton on Wednesday evening. We open the doors at 6:30, probably get started a few minutes after that, but drop in and thanks to WHOW Radio for sponsoring that in Clinton, Illinois, a Will Ag panel on Wednesday night of this week. In today's agricultural news, China's soybean imports for the year are expected to climb above 100 million tons, a senior industry analyst said today. A strong demand for animal feed boosts consumption in the world's biggest hog market. China bought about 93.5 million tons of soybeans last year, that according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. China's pork imports in 2018 are expected to decline to about 2.2 to 2.3 million tons. That'll be down from 2.5 million tons imported last year, says a bank official in Singapore. He says local pork production has picked up pretty fast, but China will continue to buy certain volumes as demand for some cuts, things like ribs, remains strong. Chinese pig prices hit their lowest level in nearly 4 years this week, plunging farmers in the world's top pork market into the red and underscoring concerns that a rapid expansion of large pig farms in China has outpaced slowing demand growth in that nation. On a related note, Chinese officials have said U.S. soybeans are a prime target for retaliation against tariffs imposed by the Trump administration on steel and aluminum imports. This according to the American Soybean Association. Farm groups have long feared that China, which imports more than a third of all U.S. soybeans, could slow their purchases of agricultural products. Warnings to the soybean growers group about their product being used as a target in trade disputes were made last year. They came up in talks talks between the American Soybean Association's leaders and officials at the Chinese embassy in Washington and in conversations between Chinese officials and U.S. soybean farmers when the farmers were on a trip to China last fall. The American Soybean Association says, "We have heard directly from the Chinese that U.S. soybeans are prime targets for retaliation. The idea that we're the only game in town and these partners have no choice but to purchase from the U.S. is just flatly wrong." Let's move from international to domestic issues now. In Section 199A, the fiscal 2018 spending fight might hit the congressional floor this week. If it does, farmers will be waiting to see if it includes a provision to reverse a lucrative tax break farmers can now get by selling goods to agricultural cooperatives. Republican lawmakers have been working furiously to try to roll back the grain glitch, or Section 199A of last year's tax cut, which would disadvantage privately held grain elevators, as well as corporate conglomerates that are not set up as co-ops. Here's the thing. How willing are Democrats to allow that sort of correction to the omnibus spending bill, given that they were largely shut out of writing the tax bill? There are Democrats who want to see this glitch fixed as fast as possible, including Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards. He wrote to congressional leaders this week urging immediate attention. Without a fix, many local and family-owned businesses will be at a distinct competitive disadvantage in the marketplace. The New York Times, in a broader piece about the fixes the tax bill might eventually need, we call those technical fixes, wrote that independent grain companies from Minnesota, Oklahoma, and South Dakota were in Washington late last month, warning that businesses like theirs could collapse or be sold. We'll keep you up to date on what's happening with Section 199 as it develops in Washington, D.C. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by agricultural economist and commodity market specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, Todd Hubbs, to discuss the March 29 grain stocks report. He's posted an article to the FarmDoc Daily website, and you look at the potential for the corn numbers. What have you found?
I've got an estimate of about 8.64 billion bushels for the March 1st corn stocks, which put second quarter disappearance at about 3.9 billion bushels, slightly under that. Now, this is really all dependent on feed and residual. Most of the other use categories, we track pretty well. And in the weekly outlook, I talk about how I calculate those numbers. Feed and residual is different. We have really no good idea as we move through the marketing year what that's going to be. And I look at sort of historical data and what the USDA is saying the number is going to be. The USDA is currently saying 5.55 billion bushels, and if that's right, we should see, based on some historical data, how I think it's going, around 1.68 billion bushels of disappearance for feed and residual in the second quarter. If we saw something, you know, a significant deviation from that number, upwards or downwards, it would give us an idea that we're not, you know, using feed at the rate we thought we were going to, and USDA would have to adjust their number. I'd like to see it above 1.7 billion bushels based on the kind of herd we've seen. I'm afraid it might be below that, though, and we'll find out on March 29th. But basically, the numbers show what we've been talking about for a few months: strengthening exports, strengthening ethanol use for corn, and some strength in like other feed and industrial uses. So it really is coming down to what are we going to do with feed this year.
So for the corn market, we have looked forward, and with all of the usage that you've been talking about, things appear that they might get better the further into the marketing year that we get.
It's looking that way. I've been pretty optimistic for a while now in the corn market. Now, having said that, we're still carrying around 2.2 billion to 2.3 billion of ending stock. So any kind of rally is probably going to be tempered by that. But there's definitely strength in the corn market use categories, and that's a good sign, especially if you want to get rid of all that corn. I feel like there's a place for, you know, there's an opportunity for corn, particularly after March 29th. Quarterly grain stocks reports usually get overshadowed by the prospective plantings report. And on that day, if we see a significant reduction in corn acres, I think we're going to see something happen in the corn market.
And by significant, you mean to something like 88.5, 88.6
million
acres? Yeah,
88.5 to 89, I think, well below the USDA estimate. I've got it at about 89.5 million acres. That's where I think it'll be. If it's below that significantly, I think there's going to be an opportunity there for corn to do something.
And USDA is currently at
90
million.
I'm going to give the USDA the benefit. That number came, I think they came with that number before we saw this huge soybean rally, or in the process of the soybean rally. I'm not sure they would do that number again if they had the chance, but we'll find out on March 29th.
Hey, thanks so much. And those who want to view your article can read it online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Todd Hubbs, of course, an agricultural economist and commodity market specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's check the cash grain market with Greg Johnson now of the Andersons. Hey, Greg, thanks for being with us. I would think farmers probably did a pretty good job of selling old crop corn and soybeans. Is that your opinion for the week?
It's kind of what we saw all week with the rally the last few weeks, especially in soybeans. Farmers have been taking advantage of those rallies and have been selling beans. And so as a result, basis levels are a little bit weaker. And then, of course, the board sold off hard on Friday, so then the movement came to a stop on Friday, but had good movement up until then.
And did they get everything they wanted to move? I suppose old crop, they kind of just emptied out the bins.
That's just it. You know, they do a good job of selling the old crop on these rallies, but very little new crop has been sold yet. And maybe that's okay if we have less corn acres, and then we can talk about some dry weather in the west and, you know, down south. I mean, maybe there still will be more opportunities, but usually when it's a good time to sell old crop corn and beans, it's a good time to sell new crop corn and beans as well.
And you haven't been able to talk him into it, I take it.
Not yet. There was so much old crop corn. I think a lot of them wanted to get some of the old crop corn sold to a more manageable level before they really started getting, you know, serious about selling new crop corn. So I think we're starting to finally see some offers being put in, but not really much has translated into actual sales yet.
Do you find it's hard for producers to sell two crops at once?
It seems like it is. I mean, some people can do it. Like I say, usually when it's a good time to sell one, it's a good time to sell the other. But for a lot of people, I'd say the majority of people, they just seem to be focused on one crop at a time. And so that it's unusual to sell, you know, two crops at once, I guess.
Yeah, I was thinking back in December, I made an old crop soybean sale, and I knew I needed to make an old new crop soybean sale and just couldn't pull the trigger. That was the first time I was faced with that, at least I think it is. And I knew that I should do it, and I didn't. So I figured everybody else is in the same boat. What are your bids for the day?
Let's see. Old crop corn today is $3.72. New crop corn this fall is $3.88. Old beans are $10.16, new beans are $10.06, and then new wheat is $5.02.
Hey, thanks so much, Greg.
Thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons, joins us from right here in Champaign County. This is the Closing Market Report for a Monday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Mark Russo from Risk Pulse out of Chicago. Mark will start again in Argentina today, but an unusual word for them. Rainfall, I think, is in the forecast, though I really don't know how much. Can you tell me?
Yeah, certainly, Todd, here. From a pattern perspective, the pattern over the next couple of weeks looks better for rainfall prospects versus the past 3 to 4 weeks. And really, in this past 3 to 4 week period that we've seen, rainfall has been less than 50 and even some cases less than 25% of normal. And that is in the core of acreage ongoing, really, throughout much of the growing season. As we look out ahead into the back half of March, we are seeing a more favorable jet stream pattern relative to the past few weeks, and that will feature at least multiple days of some shower and thunderstorm development. As it looks right now, the most significant rainfall looks to be biased in the eastern portion of the belt, approximately the eastern half of the belt. So in the states of Santa Fe, eastern Buenos Aires, Entre Rios, that looks to be the more favored area for significant rainfall versus the western part of the belt, which includes the acreage in Cordoba, La Pampa, and the western Buenos Aires. So bottom line is that we do see more favorable pattern. Doesn't look like it's going to eliminate the dryness per se, but the eastern half of the belt looks to at least receive closer to normal rainfall over the next 2 weeks.
Further to the north, farmers in Brazil have been hard at their harvest season. I want to know how that's been going and what impact, if any, the pace will have on the safrinha or second crop corn.
Yeah, overall, no issues or major issues up to this point with harvesting of soybeans. In fact, there still is some late maturing soybeans in Rio Grande do Sul in far southern Brazil that will be getting some rainfall here as part of this, you know, eastern Argentina pattern. But for the remainder of Brazil, bottom line is that we do not see a pattern that would really bog down harvest progress or impede actually planting of the safrinha corn crop. And from a soil moisture standpoint, especially in the main safrinha corn areas of Paraná up through Mato Grosso, their soil moisture reserves are in good shape and really no sign of any issues evolving as we go through the remainder of March.
And then here in the United States, we've been watching the dry conditions in parts of the panhandle of Texas, Oklahoma, and in Kansas.
Yes, that is certainly the focus of attention here in the U.S. On the wheat side of things. And the bottom line is that we do not see any significant relief in those driest areas over the next couple of weeks. Now, while those areas stay on the dry side, the one area that has been wet and will continue to be wet includes the Delta and southern Midwest. And that's also an area to start watching due to planting starting up here pretty soon across the southern areas there within that region.
One item to check in on that we haven't talked about for quite some time is in India, where their winter wheat should be coming out of dormancy and, well, actually been out of dormancy, I think, for a while. I'd like to know what conditions look like there.
Yeah, for the India winter crop season, overall, they've had some issues here this season due to a few pockets in the core of their belt not getting adequate monsoon rainfall last summer. So from an irrigation standpoint, they had a depletion of their reserves here going into the season. And on top of that, their winter was overall biased drier than normal, which they don't usually receive much rain during the winter. But even during this drier time of year, their totals were below normal. So they've certainly struggled with dryness, not a huge issue or, you know, catastrophe, but they've certainly struggled from a yield standpoint as a result of this past 6-7 months.
Thanks so much. Appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, you're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.